A young Canadian woman gets pregnant in the 1970s, but is forced to give the child up for adoption, partly because she's an unmarried teen, but also because the father is a young Indigenous man. Her white adoptive parents try to keep her as far as possible from her Indigenous roots. And that's where the novel Probably Ruby begins. It follows Ruby as she comes to terms with her heritage, her self-destructive tendencies, and her search for her family. Author Lisa Bird Wilson joins us now, and congratulations on the novel.
Oh, thank you. Tanse, hello.
So let's begin with you, since there are some similarities. You are not Ruby, but you are Métis, like from Saskatchewan. So is Ruby. And she spends her life from a very young age trying to figure out who she is. About a year ago, you published an article in the Globe and Mail that was called "I Found My Ancestors in the 1901 Census." It was a tangible reminder of colonialism's impact. Can you talk a little bit about the search, what it means to search for one's ancestors?
So, you know, as an Indigenous adoptee myself, I share that with Ruby, right? So we were both adopted as infants into white families and, you know, really disconnected from our roots and our ancestors and our family and that sense of, you know, where we came from and how we belong. And so I wanted to have this fictional character, this contemporary embodiment of all of those colonial, violent histories that are part of Indigenous people's past and histories. I think for myself, coming to an understanding in my early 20s that I was not alone in this, that this is a story that I share with at least 20,000 other Indigenous adoptees from Canada. And it's part of this process of assimilation, you know, that's been going on for centuries for Indigenous people. We sort of come to this shorthand way of talking about it. We call it the 60s scoop, which is a bit of an umbrella term for what happened across four decades of sending Indigenous kids into non-Indigenous homes to be adopted or fostered, to extend that agenda of assimilation that started with the residential schools. And it really isolated Indigenous kids into these white communities where you felt like you were the only one. And so I think it's really important for me in the book to demonstrate to other Indigenous adoptees and to people in general that we were isolated on purpose and that there was a myth somehow that we had been, you know, saved from troubled Native parents, and that we were not loved or wanted by our communities, which isn't true. And so, you know, part of what I'm trying to do in the book is to show that Ruby is loved and she's wanted. And I tried to show the way that her birth mother is so lovingly wanting to imprint Ruby on herself, but also imprint herself on Ruby. So there's a part in the book where she takes off her pajamas and she takes off the baby's clothes and she just lays down with her and just has that connection with her because she knows this baby's going to be taken from her.
You have chosen to focus through a whole series of vignettes. There are chapters of the book that focus sometimes on different members of Ruby's family, different characters in her life, ranging for decades from 1950 almost to the present. You've chosen to focus on the after effects of these things. What happens after her grandparents experienced the Canadian schools for Native children? What happens after the young mother is sent away because she's become pregnant as a teenager? Why the focus on the aftershocks?
You know, it's the aftershocks that impact us today, right? There's not anybody on this land who is Indigenous who doesn't have that history and that colonial violence in their past. And it's just a miracle that we're even here at all. But the other part of that I want to make sure is really clear is that this is also our shared history on this land. So this isn't the burden and the history for Indigenous people only. This is all of our history. This is what has brought us to where we are today.
There's connections in the book with some of the recent really horrifying headlines that have come out about Canada's history with residential schools. Both of Ruby's grandparents were sent to residential schools and clearly endured some abusive situations. I wonder what you think of all of these headlines that have come out recently about residential schools. For the Indigenous people of Canada, is the new information helpful? Is getting the word out helpful in any way?
You know, those little unmarked graves that have been discovered or rediscovered or relocated, right? Because our communities and our grandparents and our people who went to those schools understood that those grave sites were there, that Indigenous kids died. You know, I think it raises a really difficult and painful past and reality, but it's not a surprise. And just a fraction of the schools have been looked at. So that gives you a sense of foreboding of what's going to come. When I think about, you know, the 60s scoop, I think about the child welfare situation for Indigenous kids that's been going on for decades. I can very clearly see the line that goes from today all the way back into the residential schools and see how that same agenda, you know, has been driving these policies and these relationships and this systemic discrimination all along. And it's that idea of, you know, really seeing Indigenous people through a lens of white middle-class values that under and devalue Indigenous culture, Indigenous ways of knowing. And I think that Ruby, for me, is trying to just embody that contemporary view of what that's like to be an Indigenous person today and be dragging around all this history, even though Ruby ends up not necessarily knowing all of that. So the reader knows more about Ruby and this history and this background than Ruby ever really comes to know in the book, but it's still there. And we talk about intergenerational trauma and we talk about blood memory, and that's part of it, right? It's having that hard history and that hard background, but it's also, I think, really important for us to remember that that blood memory is also Indigenous joy. It's also about our ancestors, our place on the land, our cultures, our languages. It's the good parts of our history as well. And I think that we have to remind ourselves of that. You know, that's a really important aspect of the history that we also take forward with us.
So there's also a strong thread of the importance of autonomy throughout the book, not just with her grandparents that were taken to residential schools, not just with how Ruby grapples with being kept away from her own history and heritage, but there's also the chapter that focuses on Ruby's birth mother, who is a young unmarried teen, as I mentioned, a white girl who is sent away to a boarding house for young unmarried girls against her will. She tries to run away. That entire chapter is just heartbreaking. And so one of the ripples that this book seems to be tracing is how casually autonomy is taken away and how the significant impacts of that that travel through generations when you take away someone's freedom and their choice. In this book, did you want to also create the other side of that, valuing empowerment and making sure that one really grasps your choices when you have when you have options?
I think, you know, there is very much that sense of fighting back in the book. So you know, you mentioned Grace and the ways that she asserts herself. Like, she gets the notion from one of the other girls in the home that maybe they can't make her do this and maybe she can keep this baby. So she holds on to the baby for 2 weeks after it's born and they don't know what to do. Like, they're just flabbergasted by this girl who literally just won't let the baby go. You know, that's Grace trying to sort of fight back and assert herself that way. But when I think about Ruby as a character, and she's got this big personality and she's got this attitude, I think somewhere in the book she thinks or says it's only worth it if it goes too far. Like, she's just a lot, right? She's big, she's bold.
She is. She's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and she has this great big laugh. And so she takes that laugh and she uses it in a whole bunch of ways. It protects her. She covers up her pain with it. But I think it also emboldens her. And I think that that's really important, that it drives her forward. And for me, in so many ways, I found that Ruby's laugh really emboldened me. So as Ruby's creator, I was made more powerful and more bold about it by being able to use that laugh, because it allowed Ruby to take off for me as a character and to really be able to go with her in so many ways instead of trying to control her. When I look back at it now, I can see how laughter and humor is so important to Indigenous cultures and to Indigenous people. Laughter has become this really important tool in our survival. So that laugh to me is doing a lot of things.
It's either laugh or cry sometimes, right?
Yeah.
That is author Lisa Bird Wilson on her poignant new novel, Probably Ruby. Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time. And again, congratulations.
Marcy, thank you.